ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
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 Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 5, Text 4, Translation and Commentary by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Tat sadhu varya disha vartma shangnaha.
Tat sadhu varya disha vartma shangnaha.
Samradhito bhagavan yena pumsam.
Samradhito bhagavan yena pumsam.
Pridisthito yachati bhakti pute.
Pridisthito yachati bhakti pute.
Jnanam satatvadhigamam puranam.
Jnanam satatvadhigamam puranam.
Tat sadhu varya disha vartma shangnaha.
Tatsadhu varya disha vartma shangnaha.
Samradhito Bhagavan yena pumsam.
Samradhito Bhagavan yena pumsam.
Pridisthito yachati bhakti pute.
Pridisthito yachati bhakti pute.
Jnanam satatvadhigamam puranam.
Jnanam satatvadhigamam puranam.
First translation. Therefore, O great sage, please give me instruction on the transcendental devotional service of the Lord, so that he who is situated in the heart of everyone can be pleased to impart from within knowledge of the Absolute Truth in terms of the ancient Vedic principles delivered only to those who are purified by the process of devotional service. What a devote, as already explained in the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, the Absolute Truth is realized in three different phases, although they are one and the same, in terms of the knower's capacity to understand. The most capable transcendentalist is the pure devotee of the Lord, who is without any tinge of fruitive actions or philosophical speculation. By devotional service only does one's heart become completely purified from all material coverings, like karma, jnana, and yoga. Only in such a purified stage does the Lord, who is seated in everyone's heart with the individual soul, give instruction so that the devotee can reach the ultimate destination of going back home, back to Godhead. This is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita. Tesham satata yuktanam bhajatam. Only when the Lord is satisfied with the devotional service of the devotee does he impart knowledge, as he did for Arjuna and Uddhava. The jnanis, yogis, and karmis cannot expect this direct cooperation of the Lord. They are not able to satisfy the Lord by transcendental loving service, nor do they believe in such service to the Lord. The bhakti process, as performed under the regulated principles of Vaidhi Bhakti, or devotional service following the prescribed rules and regulations, is defined by the revealed scriptures and confirmed by great acharyas. This practice can help the neophyte devotee to rise to the stage of Raga Bhakti, in which the Lord responds from within as the Chaitya Guru or the spiritual master as super consciousness. All transcendentalists other than devotees make no distinction between the individual soul and the super soul because they miscalculate the super consciousness and the individual consciousness to be one and the same. Such miscalculation by the non-devotees makes them unfit to receive any direction from within, and therefore they are bereft of the direct cooperation of the Lord. after many, many births, when such a non-dualist comes to sense that the Lord is worshipable and that the devotee is simultaneously one with and different from the Lord, then only can he surrender unto the Lord, Vasudeva. Pure devotional service begins from that point. The process of understanding the absolute truth adopted by the misguided non-dualist is very difficult, whereas the devotee's way of understanding the absolute truth comes directly from the Lord, who is pleased by devotional service. On behalf of many neophyte devotees, Vidura at the first instance inquired from Maitreya about the path of devotional service by which the Lord, who is seated within the heart, can be pleased. As is normal in Srimad Bhagavatam, there's so much meaning packed into every verse and every word. Srimad Bhagavatam is none different from Krishna. Krishna tula bhagavat bibhusharva shroi prati shloke prati akhare nana artha koi, because Srimad Bhagavatam is none different from Krishna. Very powerful and can give ashray, shelter to everyone. And in every verse and every syllable, there's so much meaning there. The prayer of Vidura Maitreya is for instruction. Please instruct me. He wants to be instructed in the process of devotional service so that he can come to the stage of speaking with Krishna. And Krishna will speak with him from within the heart. Krishna is within the heart. So he's asking for the process which will raise him, as Srila Prabhupada mentions in the purport, to the stage of Raga Bhakti. He's asking for instruction on the regulated principles of Vaidhi Bhakti, or devotional service following the prescribed rules and regulations. By this practice, Srila Prabhupada writes, this can help the neophyte devotee to rise to the stage of Raga Bhakti, in which the Lord responds from within as the Chaitya Guru, or the spiritual master as super consciousness. Interesting, Srila Prabhupada writes here. The Chaitya Guru is the spiritual master as super consciousness. The Paramatma, the super soul within the heart of everyone, is the super consciousness. He's the all pervading consciousness, supreme consciousness. And that same Chaitya Guru, the Lord within the heart, manifests himself externally as the spiritual master, such as Maitreya, so that he gives specific instructions to the neophyte devotee so that he can advance to the stage of being able to speak with Krishna directly. And Krishna from within the heart also helps the devotee by giving proper instruction and encouragement. Krishna gives the intelligence by which the devotee can understand the instructions he receives from the spiritual master. Or if the devotee is not sincere, Krishna gives the intelligence by which the devotee can misunderstand. That's also quite possible. It's not that everyone who hears from a spiritual master, bona fide spiritual master, is a bona fide disciple. We get what we want. If we have ulterior motives, then we may hear and misinterpret. That's Krishna gives the intelligence. Otherwise, everyone who is following the Vedic path should be on the path of pure devotion. But everyone isn't. Krishna spoke to Brahma and the knowledge came in disciplic succession. But there are so many different branches and so many understandings, so many misunderstandings. How is it, for instance, that Krishna spoke this pure knowledge to Brahma, which was distributed through the various paramparas, and the Vedic culture is there? And nowadays, the most popular kind of worship in India is that of Sai Baba. How did that happen? someone somewhere, or many in many places, got it wrong. They heard it right, because in the beginning there was only the right instruction, and eventually someone introduced some wrong instruction. I analyzed this in a lecture, I think it was earlier this year. How did that come about, all this nonsense? And I put it down to one major influence was Ashri Tathagatit, non-auspicious, so-called Paramahamsa, Ramakrishna, with his ideas of Jato Mot Toto Pat. Whatever you think, that's one kind of path you can follow. And then you can dream up any nonsense so that a Muslim fakir becomes Sabka Malik Eik, the Lord who is the master of everyone, which is nonsense. Should be obvious it's nonsense, but it's not obvious to literally millions of people in India today. And in fact, if you try to point it out, they become very upset. Krishna gives them the intelligence to get the wrong understanding. Okay, now I'm going to say something about a Mayavadi, something good, some praise of a Mayavadi. Okay, get out your bows and arrows. You can shoot me. But actually, the Shankaracharya of Dwaraka is on a campaign to stop Sai Baba worship. So that's good. Something good. He's a non-Vedic deity. You should worship Vedic deities. He's not having much success, but I heard at least one temple he changed from a Sai Baba temple to a Hanuman temple. So, better to worship Hanuman. So misunderstanding, that is the whole reason why we're in the material world. Krishna Bhuli, Seiji, Vanadi, Varimo, Atei, Maya, Tari, Deya, Shamsharada. Forgetting Krishna, we've come to this material existence. We become inimical to serving Krishna. And therefore Maya, the illusory energy, gives us various kinds of material suffering. Krishna Bahimu Kohya Bhogavancha Kore Nikartastha Maya Tare Japatiya Dhare. Becoming inimical to Krishna, we desire sense enjoyment, and Maya is just waiting there to catch us, which she does. Aminitto Krishna Dash E Kota Bhule Mayar Nafar Hoya Chirudin Bhule. I am an eternal servant of Krishna. Forgetting this, I am wandering in this material existence as a servant of Maya. This is going on. So we have to, how do we get out of this mess? The process is given here. We approach a spiritual master who is as good as Krishna. Not a spiritual master who's a cheater, a rascal, a fool, and a demon in disguise of being a saintly person, of which there are many, especially at the present time. So that spiritual master is to be accepted as good as Krishna. We sing every morning, Sakshan Haridvena Samasta Shastraya Uttastata Bhavyata Inasana Kintu Prabhaya Priya Imatasa. Spiritual master is to be respected as good as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Sakshat Hridvena Samad. That is declared in all the scriptures and confirmed by all saintly persons. At the same time, he's known to be not exactly Krishna himself, but is respected because very dear to Krishna. And this principle is such inherent, so important, that we are warned, Guru Shu Naramatir Yasya Va Narakisaha. One who doesn't accept this, one who thinks that the representative of Krishna, the bona fide Guru, is an ordinary person, such a person becomes qualified for going to hell, or rather his intelligence is hellish. Now, why should that be? It's a big claim. It's a very big claim. Of course, it comes from Krishna himself, who in the course of teaching Uddhava, told Uddhava, Acharya maam vijani annavamanya zakarya chitna martya buddhya suyeta sarvadeva maya guruhu. Krishna said, you should know the Acharya to be myself. It's actually, literally, it says, you should know that the Acharya is me. Never disrespect him or envy him in any way. Don't think of him as an ordinary person subject to death, because he's the representative of all the demigods and all the previous Acharyas. So why is that? It's a great, bold claim. It's one of the things that in Islam is very much disliked, that anyone should be worshipped as good as God. That to them is blasphemous. Although interestingly, we see in India that many of the Muslims, they worship, they have practically their gurus, peers, they call them. And there's even a place in India where people go from all over India, not all the Muslims, but even from Bangladesh, many go to one, it's like a samadhi, Darga, it's called, the tomb. And some more fanatical Muslims bombed the place out. How long ago? You remember seeing that? Ajmer Darga was bombed out about a couple of years ago or something like that. They bombed it because they thought that that's wrong. You shouldn't do that. But I'm just making the point. It's so deeply in the Vedic culture. Even Buddha, Nindasi Yajna Vidheraha Shruti Jatam, he blasphemed the Vedic literatures. But the whole in Buddhist culture, it must be guru is essential. There's no make it yourself, do it yourself Buddhism in the original form. You have to follow a guru. Jainism is also an offshoot from the Vedic culture. There also, they have gurus. And the Sikh religion is absolutely based on gurus. Even the guru and the granth, the guru and the book, which they call the guru also. Although now Sikhism is Ritnikism, actually, because the mainstream Sikhism, they stopped after seven gurus and said, now we just worship the book and the previous gurus. Anyway, it's very deeply in the Vedic culture. And it's very difficult, we find, if people are already on a particular path and following a particular guru, it's very difficult to change their mind. Just like Bhagavatam. You know. How many, with all your preaching all these years, how many people did you change from followers of Swami Narayan to worshippers of Krishna according to bona fide parampara? Very tough, huh? Very tough. They're very much convinced that Swami Narayan is God. Although there's no Shastric evidence whatsoever. They pull out something from Skanda Purana, the word Sahajanand is there, which is his name, which just means natural happiness, that's all. And because that's in some shastra somewhere, that's supposed to be evidence that he's God. Hare Krishna. Doesn't make any sense. Well, that's why the actual guru is worshipped, because he gives actual knowledge. That's the point. And this is stated in Bhagavatam itself. Yasya Sakshat Bhagavati. So you can see the words are like that, Sakshat Haritvena. Like directly Hari, and here we have in Bhagavatam 7th canto, Yasya Sakshat Bhagavati, Jnana Deepa Pradey Guru. He is respected as good as God because he gives the light of knowledge. The Guru gives the light of knowledge. Matyasadhi shutang tasya sarvam kunjara shochavat. So if someone gives that light of knowledge, of knowledge here doesn't mean you go to school and you learn so many nonsense things and you regurgitate it in an exam. Generally speaking, in the Shastric context, the word jnana means that knowledge, just like in the Gita, Tadviti Pranipata, that, Tat, that knowledge. Vedanti Tat Tatva Vidas, Tatvam Yaj Jnanam Advayam, Brahmeti Paramahmeti, Bhagavan Nidhi Shamyate. It means the knowledge of the Absolute Truth, who is perceived in three phases. Brahmandi, all pervading and personal. Paramatma, the Supreme Lord, in his localized aspects, and Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this is the knowledge that a genuine guru gives. And therefore, if someone thinks that such a person is an ordinary person, even after being instructed that you shouldn't think like that, then all his attempts at spiritual advancement, it all comes to be like the bathing of an elephant. An elephant enters a pond, gives himself a good bath with his proboscis, blows the water all over, comes out and takes the dust on the land and gets his proboscis in action again and blows all the dust all over. It's a ridiculous thing. You bathe to get clean. Of course, there must be some biological reason the elephant does that. Maybe it's like the women after they wash their face, they put on some powder, something like that. I don't know exactly why they do that, but I don't know if they still do it, because I'm out of touch with this insane Western culture for the last 40 years. Maybe they still do it. So this is the point. The guru gives knowledge, and in that way, if he gives the same knowledge that Krishna gives in Bhagavad Gita, then he should be respected as good as God. It's the same thing. Srila Prabhupada gave the example of the postman. Someone puts something for you in an envelope, and the postman delivers it. So from your point of view, the postman is as good as in terms of receiving what's being sent, the postman is as good as the person who originally sent it. And in fact, he's more important because he's the one who actually gives it. So that's the example given. That because he delivers the knowledge intact, he doesn't open the envelope and tamper with the stuff inside. Once you start to do that, then you become a criminal. The postman, who's a respected citizen, not very respected, but anyway, he's a respectable citizen. He's respected and he's trusted to do his job properly. But if he tampers with the stuff, then he becomes a criminal. And it's the more valuable the goods being sent, the more criminal it is to tamper with it. So this is what these bogus gurus are doing. They tamper with the Vedic knowledge and adjust it, and therefore they convey the wrong thing. You give the example, someone is sending some life-saving drug, and the postman who's supposed to deliver it takes out the drug, takes something out, puts something else in which is poisonous, and gives it back. And they I got the drug, now save my life. Take it and you go to hell. You're poisoned by it. So this is what the bogus gurus are doing. But what they do, they take the statements of Shastra that the guru should be worshipped as good as God, that they will emphasize. But the point that why he's as good as God, because he gives knowledge of the absolute truth, that they don't emphasize at all. So that culture is there in India to respect the guru and worship the guru. But why? That is because the gurus don't teach this. Therefore, people don't know why they're supposed to respect it. They have a vague idea, very vague. And therefore, they are misled. So the guru is as good as God in as much as he gives knowledge. Krishna personally comes to this world. As is well known, he says, yada yada hi dharmasya glane bhavati bharata abhyutanam adharmasya tadatmanam srijamyaham paritranaya sadhunam vinashaya tadushkitam dharma samsthapanarthaya sambhavami yuga yuga. Whenever there is decline in religion and an upsurge of irreligion, Krishna says, I come myself. But actually that's going on all the time in human society. There may be phases when it's extremely bad, but actually in human society there's always decline in religion, unless Krishna comes himself or his representatives come to reverse the downward flow. Otherwise in this material world, the tendency is for everything to deteriorate. So Krishna comes to protect the, uplift the saintly persons, and destroy the demons, and in this way, Vinasha Dushu, in this way re-establish religion. So the guru is as good as Krishna. He doesn't do the work of killing demons, not exactly. He may combat their demoniac ideas, but gurus, they do this part of being God, of giving the knowledge, which from the conditioned soul's point of view, that is the most important reason why Krishna comes to this world. The conditioned souls, they don't appreciate how Krishna is the supreme beautiful, the supreme kind, the supreme loving. They don't appreciate that. They have to learn that. So Krishna comes in this world to please the devotees, but for those who are not devotees and also not gross demons, then Krishna's instructions of Bhagavad Gita are most important. So the guru does, he does this part of the guru job, of the God job, sorry. If a so-called guru thinks I'm as good as God, so I'll dress just like Pondraka, dress myself up as God, enjoy women, enjoy the opulence offered by my disciples, then he's cheating. He's taking the part which he's not meant to take and avoiding the part which he's meant to give. And if the guru gives the part that he's meant to give, then he can't take the other part. The part that he's supposed to, the role of God that the guru is supposed to play is that of giving the same knowledge that Krishna gives. Not, he's not supposed to take the role of being, trying to be the supreme enjoyer, which he cannot be. He can give knowledge as good as Krishna if he faithfully speaks what he's heard in a bona fide disciplic succession. So that part he can do. He can be as good as God in that way and is respected as being as good as God in that way. But if he tries to take the other path, then that's not his duty. He's not respected as being as good as God because he tries to enjoy this material world, but because he teaches us to not try to enjoy the material world, to surrender to Krishna. So if one actually does the role, takes the role of a guru and is as good as God for doing that, then he can't do the other side. It's not possible to actually be a guru and give the proper knowledge and at the same time be an enjoyer of this world. Because the acharyas, they teach not just by speaking. It's not just book knowledge that you can get in a... You can go to a school and study Hinduism or whatever, and you can learn. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna speaks about karma, jnana, yoga, bhakti. You can learn this in a university. But to have that knowledge, for that knowledge to actually take effect, the guru himself has to teach by his example. Achinoti yashastrani achare sthapyatyapi swayam acharate yasma tenam acharyam tena kirtitas. One is glorified as an acharya if he teaches others to behave according to the rules of scripture, who establishes those rules within the world, and who himself teaches by his own behavior. So it's not just by book knowledge, but one has to live that part also. So the role that the guru plays in establishing knowledge, he plays the role of a servant of Krishna, not the role of Krishna himself. The Mayavadis, they like this idea. The guru takes the role of Krishna, then everyone else can take the role of Krishna. But you can't. It's not possible. It's an absurd mimicry, imitation. We've been doing that absurd imitation life after life. So there's no benefit in going to a guru who tells you you're as good as you are a god, because we're already thinking that. Then what did we learn? We have to learn we're not God. Just like Giriraj Maharaj, when he recalls, when he first went to Srila Prabhupada, he wasn't a disciple, he had no idea, very little idea about what Krishna consciousness was about. He saw Srila Prabhupada, and Srila Prabhupada asked him, "Do you want to serve God or do you want to be God?" And just by asking that question, he just exposed in Giriraj Maharaj's own mind, he didn't even realize, "Actually, I'm trying to be God." He didn't even realize it. And then it just exploded his illusion in just a few words and said, "Oh, yeah, I'm supposed to serve God." Then he understood. Srila Prabhupada was able to do that clinical surgery on him, spiritual surgery, by which he understood, "I'm supposed to serve God." So that knowledge, how do we get that? By hearing, with faith, Dibya Gyan Hride Prakashito. That by this attitude, Guru Mukha Padma Vakya Chitete Koriya Aika Ana Koriya Manayasha. By taking the words of the Guru, the words that he speaks, as one with my heart and not desiring anything else, then that knowledge, that realization, becomes manifest in the heart. So there we have Chaitya Guru within the heart, gives the realization to the devotee, the Guru within the heart, Krishna, and the Guru who is outside speaking as the representative of Krishna. So it's a cooperation. For one who is serious to know Krishna, he gets a bona fide spiritual master. The bona fide spiritual master speaks, gives the proper example, trains the devotee in devotional service, and then the devotee has realization. And what is that realization? The impersonalists, the realization, it's beyond words. But Vaishnavas, we don't say it's beyond words. It's very much within the scope of words. It's the realization is that I'm the eternal servant of Krishna. But the Mayavadis don't want to accept it. So it's beyond words. You just have to realize it. And you just have to believe them. Because they can't explain what it is to you. They say it's beyond words. And devotees say, no, it's not beyond words. It's Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We have to surrender to him. We are his eternal servants. So the realization is that I'm the eternal servant. You say, well, that's just knowledge. That's just something you can learn in a book. Yeah, but it's in the book because that is the fact. But the realization means that then we understand I have nothing else to do but to serve Krishna. And I'm not meant for anything else. I shouldn't do anything else. So that is the understanding by the cooperation of the Lord in the heart and the manifestation of the Lord in the heart. As the guru who speaks the proper message of Godhead, he can actually implant that faith and understanding if he himself doesn't have any doubts. Once Srila Prabhupada was asked, "Do you ever doubt? You're speaking with so much conviction." This was in Mauritius when Prabhupada just landed, and he immediately went to give a talk. And there was one British man there, and he's at the end, after Prabhupada's talk, he said, "You speak with a lot of authority and conviction. Do you ever have any doubts?" And Prabhupada said, "If I had any doubts, then how could I speak this?" It's not a pantomime performance. Just like you can put someone in a video YouTube, and you can smile and say, "We care for you. We really love you." It's a pantomime performance. You could put a robot and say, "We care for you," but it's not convincing because the person himself obviously doesn't believe it. So when Srila Prabhupada taught us that we are all the eternal servants of Krishna, those of us who were fortunate, we accepted that. We were able to accept it from Srila Prabhupada not exactly as a philosophical principle that we went through all the Vedas and the Vedanta Sutras and all the six darshans and then, yes, this seems to make sense the best. It wasn't like that. We were convinced, not, of course, it's not that devotees sentimentally surrender to Srila Prabhupada. And Srila Prabhupada did give a philosophical understanding, but my point is, it's not that we examined every possible objection to every tenet of the Vaishnava philosophy. And actually, if you do that, you'll never come to an end anyway, because you can bring objections at every step. You can make some objection to every single thing that's said. It goes on eternally, making objections. But at some point, one has to say, yeah, this makes sense. And in Srila Prabhupada's presence, it did make a lot of sense. Actually, it's fully sensible and nothing else is sensible. But it made full sense because he himself was clearly experiencing that and is fully convinced in this regard. I'll quote, as I've quoted many times, Umapati Swami, who said that he had been studying Buddhism. And in Buddhism, they say, you can't say that it is. Don't ask what it is. That's too much. You can't say it is, and you can't say it is not. You can't say that it both is and is not, and you can't say that it neither is, nor is it is not. And then Umapati said, and then I heard Srila Prabhupada say, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he said, that's the most intelligent thing I ever heard in my life. New York, so it has to be on the platform of intelligence for them. So then he said, okay, that's it. Buddhism finished. And it is not, like some binary computer tic-tac or something. Is not. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of God. And you have to, and what does that mean? You have to surrender to him. Yeah. So this is what Srila Prabhupada was as good as Krishna. And actually, if Krishna had come himself in New York, then probably the people would have got a camera, taken photos, and maybe send in the army. It's some UFO, some alien being has come, blue skin. Prabhupada comes and he teaches. There's Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So it is to get this knowledge that we have to approach a guru. Tadvidhi pranipatena pariprasnena sevaya upadekshanti te jnanam jnaninas tadvadarshana. Guru means a teacher. It may also be a grandfatherly figure who pats babies on the head. And maybe so many other things also. But basically, the point is, delivers knowledge by speaking exactly the same message received in disciplined succession, and by acting in that way. And one is supposed to become initiated, upadekshyanti, they initiate. One is supposed to take that step. It's not like in a school where you take the knowledge and then finish. You take the knowledge and you're gone. I personally, after I passed out from the school, I never saw any of my previous teachers, even once, or had any contact with them whatsoever. No need, no point. Neither was I interested to contact them, nor were they interested to contact me. It's over, that's all. But the relationship with the Guru, because he's on the platform of eternity, and he brings us to the platform of eternity, then it's chokudano deloje janme janme prabhus. It's internal relationship. Because he gives knowledge. But again, that knowledge, it's not knowledge for the sake of knowledge. It's not a matter of just knowing, but one has to act on that platform. So pure devotional service. The Guru takes one beyond the platform of simply, yes, knowing, all right, I'm supposed to serve Krishna, but actually to the platform of pure devotion, where one actually acts in pure devotion, and to the point when one no longer thinks, well, is it this or is it that? Is it or is it is not? Beyond that platform altogether, beyond the platform of doubts, and where one spontaneously wishes to serve Krishna, as Krishna himself teaches. There's a verse in the 11th canto of Bhagavatam, evam guru pasana yaika bhaktya vidya kutharena shitena dhiraha vivrishitcha jivashayam apramata sampadya chatmanata chajastram. Here it's mentioned worship of the spiritual master. In this way, by worship of the spiritual master, with one-pointed devotion. There's another point that the Muslims have difficulty with. You can only worship God himself, no one else, because then it becomes splayed out. Your devotion should only be for God. But the one-pointed devotion to the Guru means that's not different from being one-pointed devotion to Krishna, because the Guru only teaches to worship Krishna. He doesn't teach anything else. They're both manifestations of the same Supreme Personality of Godhead. So then, with the acts of knowledge, in other places in the Bhagavatam, we have jnana asina, by the sword of knowledge. And in this particular verse, it's mentioned the acts of knowledge. One who is dhira, one who is steady in mind, means not just with his axe cutting here and there, but very steady and sober, knows where to cut by taking the knowledge. Then all the huge body of material desires and misconceptions, by taking that knowledge, one can cut away and understand what is real and what is not real. But that knowledge one has to go beyond also. Simply analyzing this material world, and is this real, is this not real, one should come to understand that knowledge, that means the process of discrimination between matter and spirit, that is not the goal in and of itself. One should understand the actual position of the soul in transcendence. Now, that doesn't mean that at any point one stops studying Srimad Bhagavatam or Bhagavad Gita. But it means that that aspect of knowledge whereby one is simply concerned with distinguishing between what is temporary and what is eternal, one has to go further than that. Bhakti tattva vigyan, that is required. Scientific knowledge of the process of devotional service, and Bhagavat tattva vigyan, scientific knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So when it's stated that one has to go beyond jnana to bhakti, that doesn't mean that one just gives up study of shastra. By no means. That is absolutely a part or essential, intrinsic to pure devotional service. But the attitude of acting on the platform of intelligence is, one goes beyond that when one comes to the level of pure devotion, because the intelligence is at that point fully fixed in Krishna, and one doesn't have to make a conscious effort to discriminate between what is right and what is wrong, because it's naturally fixed in doing the right thing. So this verse, Vidura is approaching Maitreya to ask him for the instruction by which he can come to the level of Raga Bhakti, spontaneous devotional service. And for that, one has to learn the process of step by step Vaidhi Bhakti, following the rules and regulations. So this was a very appropriate verse, as there will be an initiation ceremony this morning. Those who are to be initiated are supposed to fast until yajna, the sacrifice, is over. But you're also supposed to take some grains the day after Ekadashi. So what are you going to do? You can ask your guru. Take a little grain, that's all. That you can do. And then you can take full prasad later on. Hare Krishna. Any questions, please? Yeah.
It's just, there is no question.
There's no question.
Recently, I just want to add something that in the second half of this chapter, verse number 30, Prabhupada explains about, you told that you can always find some fault. You can always
find some fault. Actually, there is no fault in Shastra, but people who are addicted to fault-finding, they can find imagined faults.
So I just remember the purport where Prabhupada is putting everything really into the place. I can just read. The common sense, the description in this verse...
Well, I tell you what. Tell me which verse it is.
2.130.
And I'll read it for you, if I can... I can get over there. Yeah. Okay. What are we looking at? 2.130. Okay. Where does the quote begin from?
Oh, it's a short purport.
It's a short purport. Okay. This is the purport to common sense. The description in this verse appears to be somewhat contradictory because sometimes the sun is described as the eyeball, and here the outer space sphere is so described, but there is no room for common sense in the injunctions of the Shastras. We must accept the description of the Shastras and concentrate more on the form of the Virata Rupa than on common sense. Common sense is always imperfect, whereas the description in the Shastras is always perfect and complete. If there is any incongruity, it is due to our perfection, due to our imperfection, and not the Shastras. That is the method of approaching Vedic wisdom. Thank you. Good quote in this regard. Yeah, anything else?
Regarding bona fide spiritual master.
Regarding what, sorry?
Bona fide.
Regarding a bona fide spiritual master.
So, there are so many, you know, initiating gurus from disciple of Srila Prabhupada, and everybody is saying, yes, I'm bona fide. You know, so, how for neophyte devotees, how to
everyone know? Says I'm bona fide.
Yes, yeah, so how do we know that they are real followers?
How do you know if they are real followers? That requires... Well, Srila Prabhupada gave the example, if you want to buy a diamond, you should at least have some initial knowledge of what a diamond is. If you go to a cycle repairing shop and someone gives you some nuts and bolts and says these are diamonds, then you're going to get cheated. So you should have some initial knowledge. So we should know what Srila Prabhupada, if you're going to be a bona fide follower of Srila Prabhupada, we should know what he taught, have some idea. Something should be obvious, but somehow or other, not obvious. I can give an example, and it should be obvious, and it's controversial to say it, but I'm not a stranger to controversy. It should be obvious that a sannyasi shouldn't travel around with a woman secretary. It should be obvious. But somehow, it's not obvious. to everyone. An example. Patitanam Pavane Bhyo Vaishnavi Bhyo Namo Namaha. All the rest of the language.